Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
And what's it gonna do?
It doesn't matter how you're doing. Woo! Wheel and deal it. Limousine wreck. Jet flag.
Can you dig it, digga sucker?
Would you please shut the hell up?
You don't know what hard times are, daddy.
The cream will rise to the top. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Look at my doing rubble.
What up, what up? Welcome to episode 159 of Keep the Kayfabe. I'm Mike, sitting here with my boys, ready to talk some wrestling. Tonight's going to be a lot of fun. We've done a lot of reflecting lately, and we wanted to come up with a really fun topic, and we've been collaborating with the fans online and in our group chat, and we came up with a pretty solid list and a pretty solid plan to discuss the greatest tag team breakups of all time. Yes, it is something that adds so much good flavor to the art of wrestling. You know it's coming at some point, but when and why? So, yeah, we got a lot of interesting teams queued up for you, but let's cue you up to who you're listening to today. It is a guy that keeps it regal. He lives over in Glendale. His name's Steve Grobschmidt. What up, Grobby?
I got Peggy Sue beside me, the colonel in the back, coming to your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky-tonk man.
He's just a honky-tonk man.
I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm bad.
Shake, rattle, and roll, baby.
That's
good,
right,
to see
baby.
You tonight, Steve.
Good to see you guys, as always.
1,000%. Let's go over to the Midwest. A man who resides in Ohio, the man with the golden pipes, Mr. Gary Williams. What up, Gary?
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll. Somebody call your mama. Somebody call your mom.
Wow.
Somebody call your mama. Old Brodus Clay, baby. Baby.
Brodus Clay.
Tell me about Brodus Clay.
The man who killed the man who killed the NWA.
Yeah. Well, Brodus Clay was he's an actually, I guess it's fair to say, a very very Fox News type person.
He's Fox News. Yeah,
he's actually but he was a big dude that
Tyrus.
He was a wrestler, and he came out with the Funkadelics, and I was Naomi one of the Funkadelic.
You're right.
I think she was Naomi, and so and they had the it was kind of when he was going through this kind of like renaissance of being. Kind of like it was kind of like a Godfather kind of thing, except it wasn't risque. Well, so
when you were doing that, when you were singing that song, and then you brought up the Funkadelics, it brought to mind Flash Funk or Too Cold Scorpio. Remember when he was Funk though?
I do.
When he had the Funkettes and shit.
Yes, dude, and so Flash he was kind of the reincarnation of that. So
yeah, a recycled gimmick.
It was very much a recycled, but I can't remember. I stumbled on him this week, and I don't know. It was
boom, baby.
It made me remember a good time in wrestling. So,
well, I'm glad. That's what we're here for at Keith the Kayfabe.
Great to see you all, fellas. I can't wait for this episode. It's pretty cool. So, but yeah, excited to be here.
Hell yeah. Can't wait to get her going too, Gary. But we got one more person to introduce. He's a man that keeps it freshly squeezed. He's from Bayview. But he's also our friendly neighborhood Val Venus. Val. Or wait, his name is Matt Michelson, but he also goes by the name of Val Venus. Val, I hear you're having some margaritas tonight. Tell me more.
Hello, ladies. The Big Val Boakes, he's sitting here tonight having some Mexican food. And with that food, he's got to wash it down. And what better to wash it down with than a big... thick margarita. Well, if Val's gonna eat, he's gonna eat tacos, but first he's gonna lick the rim.
Ooh, and I bet it all tastes salty all the same too, eh, Val?
Salty
depends with who you work with.
Is the Big Val Boski's favorite flavor.
Good to see you tonight, Val. And you too, Matt.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks, Val.
Awesome, man. Good stuff. Well, yeah, we got a lot to cover tonight. As I said at the top of the show, we came up with a great list, and we got some great feedback about the greatest tag team breakups of all time. So thank you for your submissions. Keep them coming. Shoot us a note on our DMs on Instagram and Facebook, YouTube, under Keep the Kayfabe. Awesome, man. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious. There's definitely a tag team breakup that is like when Hulk Hogan joined the NWO, like monumental stuff. It's always going to be remembered forever, and that is the breakup of the Rockers. Yes, our good friend of the show, seriously, Marty Jannetty, and one of my favorite wrestlers, Shawn Michaels, epic shit. Steve, why don't you walk us through this epic breakup?
Yeah, so I mean, this was, I think, in the mid-80s and or late 80s and not early 90s even, but the team started in the 80s. And it started off with some real life stuff, if I'm remembering right. Like Marty Jannetty was kind of having issues, and there was like this, is he going to leave the WWF or not? And I think later he said he had no intention. But anyway, there was like this weird thing that started behind the scenes, but then it started manifesting on the show itself, where they were getting into little squabbles and matches. And then, like, you know, like the classic thing, like there's going to be a recurring theme with all these ones we're talking about where they just start, they're not sinking. And then I think in one of their last matches was against the Legion of Doom, and they were like not getting along. And of course, they lost to the Legion of Doom because everybody did. And I guess there was some incident where they got into a real life like drunken fight, egged on by Roddy Piper. Police were involved. And then, you know, they kind of manifested this, like I said, on TV where they started squabbling. And then on in December of 91, and then they aired it, like, I think a month later, was like the infamous Brutus the Barber Beefcake Barbershop, where they brought them both on to kind of rectify the situation. And it looked like Shawn Michaels was like, okay, man, okay, like, yeah, let's work on this. And then he laid him out. And I think he super kicked him first, and then he sent him through the glass window, which is the moment that I think it's probably like, certainly in that era, before the era of like super crazy shit happening every single week on wrestling, that was like a holy crap. Did that just happen? Like threw a dude through glass. And yeah, it's probably like, there's a reason we're leading off with it. It's one of the all timers, if not the best tag team breakup. Shawn Michaels would go on to be an all timer. Marty Jannetty would go on to be Marty Jannetty. yeah, he got an Intercontinental title years later, but really never amounted to what his partner did.
Mm-hmm. And a Dark Side of the Ring episode, so you can hang his hat on that.
And an interview with Keep the Kayfabes. Just recently.
Yeah, so fun fact about that interview. For our longtime listeners, you may have heard it. For the new listeners, first, welcome. Second, go back to episode 129 and listen to our interview with Marty Jannetty. He talks in that interview about the breakup between him and Sean, because of course I had to ask him about it. And if you don't want to go back and listen to the whole thing, basically the gist of it is he and Sean at that point were kind of like an old married couple, at least if you want to take Marty's word for it. And with like any, you know, group of friends like that, or anybody who's together 24/7 traveling the road, you're going to have tension developing. And what's great about pro wrestling is sometimes they do a great job of blurring the lines or bringing that real life tension into a storyline. And to Steve's point, going through glass at that time was pretty much unheard of. So this happened, Steve, like you said, I think it was December 91, January 92, somewhere around there. So I had just turned, and this is going to date me, but 7 years old at the time. So I was very young.
Damn.
But I was a WWF fan. I knew the Ultimate Warrior, loved him, Hulk Hogan, all those characters. These were larger than life figures for me. And when I saw Marty Jannetty go through a glass window on WWF TV, I mean, dude, I remember it to this day. And I remember like exactly what it looked like. I've gone back and watched it on YouTube, of course, since. And it's exactly how I remember it. Just an all-time classic moment. But yeah, for our listeners, again, I don't do it justice. Steve doesn't do it justice. Marty kind of does. Go back and check out episode 129. It's an interesting interview. He talks about the breakup of the Rockers and, of course, a bunch of other things as well. Funny enough, I want to say it was a few days after that interview, Marty's episode of Dark Side of the Ring dropped. So the timing on it was a little interesting. Definitely worth a listen, though. Go check it out.
I think it's really important to note with the Rockers, too, that, you know, I mean, they started as a tag team in 1985, and man, they were a byproduct of the Rock and Roll Express, even to some degree, you know, mimicking a lot of their style, but they really mm-hmm. came into their own and were super popular tag team in the AWA and the NWA. I mean, and that's when Vince began raiding the territories. And I think, you know, I even, you know, you think back to just kind of their work together. They had some banger matches with the old Midnight Express and others in the AWA, really bloody match. I think it was with, I want to say it was the iteration with Buddy Rose and, oh gosh, I'm drawing the name.
Andre?
I wonder if it was Doug Summers and Buddy Rose. They were managed by Sensational Sherry, even, which is really ironic because Sensational yeah. Sherry comes back later in Michael's career. But it was a
when he breaks up with them. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bloody, bloody match in where they won the titles. And so it was just crazy, just how popular they were at the time. And then just to see. And one other thing to note about this is, and this will rear its head again with a couple other breakups that we'll talk about. But there is speculation that some of this actually had to do with the fact that Marty Jannetty was upset at Vince McMahon behind the scenes for basically not paying them enough money. And ultimately, HBK had a sly little bit more political clout. And so, in essence, it kind of screwed Jannetty, and HBK was the one who kind of took over from there. So I'm sure some of that is a shoot, some of it's a work, I don't know, but definitely a lot of credence to the triumph of the Heartbreak Kid, because Jannetty was the one who kind of fell on the sword. HBK kind of rode into the sunset then. So
absolutely. Yep. It's going to be one of those things that I remember well, and I'm actually really happy that it happened, because we wouldn't have gotten the solo career that Shawn Michaels had, and we wouldn't have gotten the downward spiral interview that we got for KTK for Marty Jannetty. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all written in the stars. True. Here at Keep the Kayfabe. All right, let's get to the next one. And this is a really cool, it's not necessarily a tag team, it's a faction and a stable, but it was an epic breakup. And honestly, I haven't thought about it in a long time, but yet all of these individuals are very, very, very significant in wrestling today and in their own respective rights for their roles. And it's pretty cool. It's kind of equivalent to that Lords of Dogtown movie, that skateboarding movie, like the three awesome skateboarders. When I think about it, they all have their unique personalities. They all got their own styles. And then they go off and do their own thing and are fucking legends. So there's my equivalent to The Shield. That's right, folks. They are the group that came out, you know, through the stands. They had the bulletproof vests on. Good shit. And this is like when they were young stars. This is stuff that they're going to talk about from a long time on, because a lot of these guys have amazing careers. So, Matt, what can you tell us more about this and their breakup that happened?
Well, it was good shit indeed. The Shield broke out on the scene in the main roster of WWE. I want to say it was about 2012. And for those of you who aren't familiar with The Shield, maybe you're newer to wrestling, we're talking about Roman Reigns, who is one of the most dominant WWE champions of all time. Well, no longer, but we'll get to that. Dean Ambrose, who is now Jon Moxley in AEW and one of the most successful wrestlers in that promotion. And then you have Seth Rollins, who ended up becoming sort of the workhorse of the three and carrying WWE, well, at least from a corporate standpoint, for most of the 2010s and even, you know, the current decade. So these three guys ended up becoming best buds through FCW and NXT. They get brought up onto the main roster as this faction of, I guess, kind of like tactical mercenaries that are just running roughshod over the rest of WWE. And they come onto the scene, instant hit with the fan base. Their first big feud is with the Wyatt family, who had established themselves as this creepy mega heel faction. And the Shield just comes in and basically sets the record straight with everyone. So they get super over with the crowd almost immediately. Now, fast forward, I want to say it was 2013, 2014. So they were a short-lived faction, maybe a year or two. And one night, Seth Rollins turns on them by hitting Roman Reigns in the back with a steel chair. fast forward to WrestleMania 40, which just happened at the time of this recording a couple weeks ago. There's a moment in the main event of WrestleMania 40. Roman Reigns is left in the ring with a steel chair facing Cody Rhodes. And then Seth Rollins is laying in the corner in his Shield gear. And Roman Reigns chooses to take revenge on Seth Rollins for what happened all those years ago when Seth turned on him. It's one of the best pieces of long-term storytelling that WWE has done in years. Now, obviously, they weren't plotting WrestleMania 40, 10, 12 years ago. But I think sometimes reverse engineering long-term stories like that can be a really effective tool because nostalgia is a really powerful thing. So,
for sure,
the Shield breakup is a classic moment in WWE, at least modern WWE. Steve, I know we are all on again, off again, have this love-hate relationship with WWE. What are your memories of the Shield and what are your thoughts on this breakup?
No, I actually was watching when that happened. I mean, not religiously, but no, I remember that because, like you said, the Shield was like, you know, they tried factions in WWE in that time. Like, what was that, Nexus or whatever, which was like this NXT invasion that was kind of a wet fart in church. Like, it wasn't that great. And then the Shield comes along and they very easily could have been the same type of thing. It's like, oh, okay, these three up and comers. But I mean, when you look at it, you just said it perfectly. Three of the biggest players today, like 10 years later, like Moxley just won the freaking like IWGP title. Roman Reigns had the third longest reign ever, fourth longest reign. And then Seth Rollins has never gone away. He's still been huge. They weren't around forever. It wasn't like years and years and years, but I remember that Wyatt feud was just like pretty epic. Like the crowd loved both teams to a degree. So it was like, just, it was just made people giddy. And I remember that night when Seth turned on him. It was like kind of the perfect direction at the time. You know, I've bitched about Seth before, but that was like, to me, maybe the high point of Seth, because he was a really dastardly villain after that. And he kind of ran with it. So, definitely one of the all timer factions. And their breakup was heartbreaking for some.
Gary, any final notes for the fans?
Matt and Steve did a great job with this one. And I think the most important part about this breakup isn't so much just them breaking up and the drama behind it, but just the trajectory that all three have been on. Mm-hmm. If you look at a lot of the, historically speaking, very few of these tag team breakups did all of the parties go in a positive direction.
That's a good point.
This one was one in which everyone benefited from. So they not only benefited from being together, it accelerated themselves as singles to break up. And so I just think it's pretty cool that in the breakup, they all excelled, which was not common for many of the groups that we'll talk about. There'll be a couple others that have survived the breakup to be in good shape, but these guys for sure did.
I love a good win-win-win, you know what I mean? Win for the fans, win for the business, win for the wrestlers. That's how we like to keep it here. All right, we have another win-win-win, same kind of deal. This is probably involving two of maybe the top five most recognizable, often imitated, hardly ever replaced, two of the greatest wrestlers of all time in the heyday. It is the Mega Powers, Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan. Yes, they were a group and there's significant history here. Gary's got more to say about it. Tell us about the Mega Powers, Gary.
The Mega Powers is definitely a tag team breakup that I think resonated with a lot of our fans on Keep the Kayfabe. And we heard time and time again from so many people in social media that this is one that is etched in their memories. And so I lived it and remember it well, because the breakup actually occurred in the brand new Bradley Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, back in basically right around 1987-ish.
Was built to support the St. Louis Blues. They were supposed to be a hockey stadium, but it never happened.
Wow.
But It supported lots of fun events, great concerts. It's no longer here. Fiserv Forum has replaced it. But, I mean, Admiral Games, concerts, where the Mega Powers broke up.
Yep.
C'est la vie.
I mean, that is really good history right there. And, so around 1987, basically Hogan Savage kind of started becoming acquainted with one another creatively. Hogan, obviously, big baby face. Randy had kind of had basically played a heel for most of his career. But where this kind of culminated in terms of their kind of like friendship was when Hogan helped Savage win the vacated WWF Championship in WrestleMania 4. He took a chair to Ted DiBiase and then the big elbow in his 1-2-3. And so, and then from there, there was just a number of things that kind of occurred. And the reality of the makeup and breakup had something to do with Miss Elizabeth. And that in the end, Elizabeth was trying to, you know, help Randy in a couple different cases where he was having the old AEW beatdown. And that's an inside joke. We can tell some other time, but and Elizabeth brings Hogan back from the dressing room, and there's these huge moments. And so then there was that famous handshake, you know, of the uniting of the Mega Powers. And I can like literally hear Vince McMahon's voice just, you know, going way overboard about it. But basically after a series of these types of things, it was destined to be, you know, where the Macho Man and it would get jealous of the way that Miss Elizabeth, Miss Elizabeth actually used taking off her skirt as a distraction to help their team win at SummerSlam in 88. The issue really rose more at Survivor Series when Savage was really upset at the Hulkster and how much attention he was giving to Miss Elizabeth. And it only intensified then when you have the accidental elimination of the Macho Man from the Royal Rumble. And so it was in February of 89, when they had the main event. It was a Friday special. And that's when they were battling the Twin Towers. Honorable mention to the Twin Towers for a breakup as well. But basically what ends up happening is Elizabeth gets injured. Hogan carries her to the back and abandons Savage. And then once Hogan returns, there's this big slap across the face. And then there's ginormous breakup behind the scenes that they videotape. And the famous line, Steve, what's the famous line?
You got
lust in your eyes, Hogan. So I mean, it was so pretty great. Cool. But I will say
it's true though.
It was.
The eyes are the window to the heart.
The eyes.
Yeah.
Shout out Paul Simon.
But I would Thanks tell you listening. That, you know, like in the grand scheme, you know, it was pretty iconic, but there, you know, there was a little bit of heat behind the scenes anyways, between Savage and Hogan and it continued into, you know, even when they went into the NWO, eventually there was, you know, some heat that generated between them.
Yeah,
so, sure. But this by far is one of the most, iconic trips that, WWF at the time took us on, and one that I would say, I don't know, Matt, if this wasn't the highest next to the Rockers, I would imagine this was the next most voted for breakup by the fans.
Yeah. We saw a ton of posts on Facebook commenting about the Mega Powers. And for those of our listeners and followers on Facebook, thank you so much for all the feedback on this show. This has made our jobs a lot easier. Plus we like making content that you guys like. So shout out to all of you. Gary, fun fact, I actually did not realize that Miss Elizabeth took her skirt off at some point. It's really lucky for her that Val Venus was not around at that time. Hey, easy, Val, easy. Yeah. But in all seriousness, this breakup was unique in that, you know, we talk about the Rockers and how that propelled one of them, but not the other. And before that, they were both still on the coming up. You know, they were stars, but they didn't start out that way. And then you have the Shield, who was kind of in the same boat. They were still, you know, coming up, and their breakup ended up skyrocketing all of them to superstardom. I think it's fair to say with the Mega Powers, they were already huge stars mm-hmm. when they formed, and they were still huge stars after they broke up. It didn't really make or break either of their careers. I do remember as a small kid watching this, how almost excited and blown away I felt by the fact that Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage were in the same room together, let alone teaming up together. To me, it was just such a feel-good moment as mm-hmm. a kid watching these two guys partner up to take on all these other tag teams. So it was a huge deal, Gary, to answer your question. I remember it still well, even though I was really young at the time. But that just goes to show how momentous of a breakup and how big of a team these guys were. Steve, I guess, any final thoughts or anything you want to add to what Gary said?
I don't need to go into any detail because you guys covered it greatly. However, I will say, even as a kid, this was the era I started getting sick of Hulk Hogan, and I was 100% in Macho Man's corner. And Hogan did have lust in his eyes. He did the line with Elizabeth. Shame on him. And he had to ruin Macho Man's moment because he wasn't the guy anymore.
Looking back, that is absolutely true. Everybody said Savage was super protective and maybe paranoid, but you can see the lust in his eyes for sure.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing, you know, there was a lot of connections before this. Hogan had a few of these breakups. Another honorable mention is him and Orndorff, or him and Andre, these friends mm-hmm. that ended up turning out to be you know, heels to face Hogan. It was a way to keep Hogan consistently having, you know, those really important matches as they were piecing together his long reign. You know, they had to come up with these kind of like makeup breakup kind of things so that they could keep Hogan progressing and have people thinking that he was going to lose the title. And so, the Orndorff, Hogan, and Andre before him. And then later on, Sid Justice, even Shawn Michaels, all of those things, they're all part of the same kind of cycle that Hogan went through so that he could keep his title reigns moving forward and give the fans some hope that there was a credible person going to take a title.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the greatest moments in wrestling history, to be quite honest with you. Let's sure. keep it moving. There is a little tag team called Strike Force, and I cannot wait to hear more information about this. And Steve has all the info that we're waiting to hear about this epic tag team breakup.
Yeah, Steve? This was one of those that I didn't need to do research to remember, because honest to God, I can still picture it. There's two moments involving Strike Force that I can picture to this day, because at the time it was like, holy crap. The first being when Strike Force beat the Hart Foundation, because that was just on one of the weekly shows like Superstars or Challenge or whatever one mm-hmm. where they just up and beat him. And I was like, what just happened? And they made Jim Neidhart like submit to the Boston Crab. So, I mean, this was a good team, Strike Force. It was Tito Santana and Rick Martel. I think they teamed up in the AWA, not as Strike Force, but as a tag team. And then they won the titles, held on to them for a little while, and then they lost them at WrestleMania 4 to Demolition.
Yep.
And Martel got beat up pretty bad. But then, you know, in the storyline, they had it where Martel took time off because he took a finisher, but his wife was ill, and that's why he had mm-hmm. to leave. So he was gone for a while. They didn't team up for a while. But then they came back, and again, it was the classic theme where Tito Santana accidentally used his flying forearm and hit his partner. And then Martel got super angry, and like and that's where then he started saying that like Santana like was like always trying to like copy him, and he was like jealous of him. And then wrestlers of that era wrestling fans of that era will remember like this in like the Rick Martel would go on to become the infamous Model, which was a notable funny character from the time.
With arrogance
perfume, and he had the feud with Jake the Snake where he sprayed him in the eyes with it and stuff, but got real close if I remember right. Like there was a tournament or something for the Intercontinental mm-hmm. title, and he lost in the finals, I think, to Razor Ramon or something like that. So he got close to gold, but and Tito just hung around. But I just remember that. There was a great tag team, two guys that would go on to be pretty notable legends, and Rick Martel just ran with it then to be an arrogant heel, not unlike, but not as successful as Shawn Michaels.
I'll be the first to admit that I had no clue who Strikeforce was. A lot of our Facebook followers had mentioned these guys, so I had to do a little bit of Googling. And the moment I saw Rick Martel, I just kind of rolled my eyes because I feel like Gary and Steve talk about Rick Martel on a lot of episodes of Keep the Kayfabe. Like somehow his name always comes up in conversation. but it did force me to go back. I want to say it was to WrestleMania 3. Where those two had a tag team match, and man, Rick Martel could go, especially for that era. His work rate was really noticeably further ahead of a lot of other folks in WWF at the time. By the way, shout out to Bobby Howding on Facebook. He was the first of our Facebook commenters to mention this team. So thanks, Bobby, for calling these guys out. But yeah, Rick Martel, I definitely have more interest in him now than I did prior to us recording this episode. So for some of our younger listeners, if you're not familiar with Strikeforce, go back to the original WrestleMania, specifically the one Steve just mentioned. They work some great tag team matches, even by today's standards, well worth a watch.
You know, the honorable mention shout out to the fans for also mentioning the precursor to this team, which was the Can-Am Connection, Tom Zink and Rick Martel. It was Zink, Martel, and Kurt Hennig, the three of them, Tom Zink, that were buddies in the AWA in 1985-ish. Tom Zink and Rick Kurt Hennig actually went to school together. Zink and Martel then got paired together when they were in the, when they left, when the territories got raided and people started coming to the WWF, Zink and Martel got put together. And the irony of the situation is the Can-Am Connection was a pretty hostile breakup because it ultimately, this is the quote about this. It was ultimately Rick Martel with his greed who split up the Can-Am Connection. And so there was a ton of drama over how much money they were getting paid per match. And Tom Zink ultimately felt like in the end that Rick Martel was screwing him out of money. And then they end up having this colossal breakup. And actually, you know, the Strike Force, the name, they actually kind of adopted kind of the Can-Am kind of connection a little bit, but then it was in the way they came up with their name was they were in a promo and Rick Martel was, I think they were talking about Demolition, and they were saying how they were going to strike with force. And that's when, yeah, we're Strike Force. And that's how the
how name inspired.
Came together. It was something along those lines. I may have a little revisionist history and who they were talking about, but it was definitely a kind of a corny way to get a tag team name together. That's for sure. But
I have very a strong big feeling Vince McMahon was involved in that decision.
Yeah, just very much so. But for the old school fans out there, this was definitely a breakup on both sides, Can-Am Connection or Strikeforce. Rick Martel was in the middle of both of them. And the irony is, at the end, his character, his arrogant character, was the one that kind of lent itself through all of this. And that may have been more of his own persona than people may have realized in the first place.
Fantastic stuff here, boys. We got one more to get to, and it is a saucy one. We are talking about the tag team of DIY. Yes, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, one of my favorite NXT tag teams. That's what kind of like really got my attention. I mean, it was pretty stacked back then when they were like running hard. NXT had a lot of great years, and a big deal to do with that, I think, was DIY. Let's send it over to someone who actually knows these guys pretty up close and personal, and he'll probably talk about it. Matt Michelson, what say you?
Yeah, up close and personal is a good way to put it. So, man, where do you even begin with this? So for some of our newer listeners or just newer fans of pro wrestling, if you watch WWE today, DIY is a tag team on the main roster, and it's Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. But prior to that, they were in WWE's developmental program, NXT, And I want to say, you know, rewind back to, let's call it 2016. These guys are a tag team in NXT. They're putting on banger matches. Just everybody loves them. Johnny Gargano is one of the most amazing wrestlers at that time in American professional wrestling. Tommaso Ciampa, fun fact, is from Milwaukee or billed from Milwaukee. So everybody here at Keep the Kayfabe is a huge fan of this guy, hometown hero. These two form a tag team, put on banger matches, like I said. But then I want to say it was at NXT TakeOver Philadelphia. They have a match. They end up losing the match. And it's just a heartbreaking moment. Tommaso Ciampa gets himself injured in the match. So as an audible, the show's about to go off the air. The NXT signature comes up on the screen. Ciampa grabs Gargano and says to him, "I'm sorry," and smashes his face into the LED screen at the top of the ramp. One of the most heartbreaking moments in NXT history when people actually cared about NXT. So Ciampa's injured. He goes out for about a year. One day just suddenly turns up, comes back, beats Johnny Gargano's ass with a crutch. The crowd turns on this guy. It's the most heat I had seen as a professional wrestling fan at that time on any individual ever. So these two begin feuding, and they had a trilogy of matches at different NXT takeovers. The one that really stands out to me was NXT TakeOver Chicago 2, where they had a street fight. And for the first time in NXT TakeOver history, typically the NXT title would main event every TakeOver. This was the first match in NXT TakeOver history that actually did not have the titles the main event. It was Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa in this street fight, just this blood feud that had been brewing for years at this point. So my wife, Becky, and I drive to Chicago to the Allstate Arena, and we get seats up near the Titantron. Mike, I believe, and his wife also come with us and sit in a different part of the arena. So we weren't actually sitting together. But if you go and watch this match on WWE Network, or depending on the country you're in, Peacock, there's a moment in the match where Tommaso Ciampa drags Johnny Gargano up the ramp. They fight into the crowd, end up on top of a bunch of road cases. Obviously, this is an audio podcast, so not all of our listeners know who I am or what I look like, but you can clearly see myself and Becky, my wife, who, by the way, fun fact, is a special guest of ours on the WrestleMania watch along we did. I believe it was episode 155. Just a hilarious person. Go check it out if you haven't listened to it. But anyway, these two take a dive off of these road cases through a table. And Becky and I happen to get caught in the instant replay, and our reaction cracks myself up to this day. Occasionally, we'll go back and watch it just to get a good laugh. That to me was one of my favorite matches I ever saw live, because I'm just a ghoul for street fights and hardcore matches, but also the emotion and the storytelling that had happened up to that point. We were both so invested in it. And fun fact, and Becky will never admit this on the air, she was not into wrestling at the time. Frankly, didn't really care much about going to the show, but just, you know, it's a bunch of friends going out together. Like, she was all up for it. This match was so compelling. We leave the arena. We happen to see Mike and his wife walking out. And I remember, Mike, the first thing you said to Becky was, "Well, what did you think of the show?" And of course, being a person who doesn't like wrestling, like at the time actively does not like wrestling, her response is, "I mean, I don't know," which immediately told me, okay, I have a chance. She is giving this a chance. We're going to see where this goes. Fast forward years later, we're married and now she loves it. So to me, this match and this breakup stands out because it spun off this epic feud in NXT that I look back on very fondly. And it was also the beginning of something new, like a lot of great breakups. And in this case, it happened to be the beginning of Becky's fandom of pro wrestling. So there's a story for you.
It was a fantastic night. I think we hit up the local Applebee's close by. There was, like, after the thing ended, kids were running around, skipping and jumping, chanting Tommaso Ciampa's name, I remember.
Wow.
I mean, we were stuck. Me and Kristen were actually stuck in, like, this section. We had great seats, but we were stuck between, like, some major obese people and then, like, three rows behind us. These people just had to make a comment about every move. And, you know, like, at wrestling shows, you want to, like, say some stuff that the crowd's like, like, it makes it fun.
Got to pop the crowd.
Well, these guys, like, really wanted to do it, but they weren't even close to the ring. We were in the upper deck. So it's just like, guys, like, just chill. So we actually moved to the corner of the arena where you could actually see backstage. So I was seeing like Malakai Black just pacing around, like he was the champion at the time, and like in the zone. It was actually pretty cool. So yeah, unbelievable times. Go support your local wrestling, everybody.
At the end of the day, the coolest part about it is just seeing them recycle back together now, which also is not something all of these teams have done. And the fact that they're now, you know, rebranded as a tag team and kind of, you know, traveling together, I think just shows just how cool these two guys and how much chemistry there are between them. And I think, you know, I think the world of both wrestlers are undersized. They're not your typical WWE cut, but I think their work rate speaks for itself.
Yeah. Their careers didn't really translate as much into the pros, but I mean, is Tommaso Ciampa still kind of going? Does he got a story going on?
Yeah, right, they're together, right? Mm-hmm. On Raw, I think.
Yeah, they're tag team. They've been in the tag team title hunt, and they were just in... Wait, they just won the... Did they... I believe they just won the number one contender match this last week.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Yeah, they're... I mean, so they're going to face The Miz and... R-Truth.
So, Mike, are we getting tickets? Are we going back and... kickstarting this all back over again?
I'll say this. Oh, Tommaso Ciampa. Oh, Tommaso Ciampa. Like five like giddy teenagers, like just skipping around the Allstate Arena or wherever the thing was, just hopping around. I mean, it was 20 minutes after the show and they were still chanting this.
Everybody was fired up. It was one of the most energetic nights I can remember of pro wrestling.
Seriously, NXT in that era was magic.
Oh, fucking yeah.
Yeah.
It actually brought me closer to you guys.
Yeah.
Charlie, Steve, and Matt. Like, I wasn't even in it. I had the coffee cart, and that's how we all met. And then Gary got in the mix a little later, got to meet him. So, you know, shit happens. NXT was a development for KTK, to be quite honest with you.
I went to every single show in Milwaukee. I remember the first one I went to is like, you look at the people that were on that show and where they are now, like FTR, Bailey, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor. It's like Samoa Joe. No, he wasn't on that one, but he was on a different one. But it's like, holy shit. Like they really had a lot going on there.
And the best part was, I think we all knew at the time how special it was, which made it so great. And
yeah,
if I could go back, and we're going on a little bit of a tangent now, but frankly, if I had to choose between current AEW and 2016 NXT, I would pick 2016 NXT every time. There was just something about the timing of it and everyone's knowledge of the industry at the time and what we thought was exciting. They were perfectly positioned at the time to do even things that went slightly outside the box for WWE were just groundbreaking. So they could have kept that going so much longer. It's a shame how it all shook out, I think. But yeah, just what a time to be a wrestling fan. I think that's honestly one of the things that kept me into pro wrestling and thankfully led us to where we are today.
Well, that was a really good, solid list of five tag team breakups, but we should probably run down some quick hitters real quick for the fans because they're like, why the fuck didn't they cover those guys? So, Gary, what do you have for your quick hitters list?
All right, I've got a couple. I've got three quick hitters. And obviously, I'm going to tap into the old school era. The first quick hitter are the Blade Runners, Sting and Warrior. The reason I bring this up is because had they not broken up, I think Sting's career would have been over. Like it was so bad with the Warrior, but when he broke up with the Warrior and they went their separate ways, Sting basically became the icon that he was. And so, thank you, Ultimate Warrior, for breaking up with Sting. The other one is the Freebirds and the Von Erichs. Steve and I have covered this on previous podcasts. But 1982, when Terry Gordy slammed the cage door on Kerry Von Erich's head, it erupted two straight. Now, you want to talk about long-term booking. 2 full years of feuds between the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. And they were printing money in Dallas during that time. But
that had to been fun, eh?
Oh, my gosh. Like
printing money?
you guys, to this day, I still, if you go back and watch from 1982 to 1984, world class, amazing, and is all predicated around the Freebirds and the Von Erichs. The last quick hitter I'll have, also back into the 80s, but this is a really funny one. Ted DiBiase and Jay White in the Mid-South territory were best friends. In fact, they were in each other's, or wait, Jay White was in Ted's wedding, I think, if I remember right. Long story short, they both were beloved. And then Ted DiBiase, they needed a heel. Ted DiBiase's like, well, why don't I try this out? And they started literally printing money as well. This spurred on Ted DiBiase to be the Million Dollar Man character type, and one of the greatest heels of all time. Lists this story about how much heat there was after he turned. He says, Ted DiBiase is quoted as, well, the crowd in New Orleans was about 90% black and they loved JYD. Up till then, they loved me. So when we were going, I refused drive my own car because the last arena that I was at, they slashed all of my tires while it was parked in the back and I was facing JYD. So he literally had to have someone else drive him around because people were slashing his tires. So that breakup spurred on two amazing characters, and I thought was a really worth mentioning. Can you imagine today? You come out, your tires are slashed.
No, let's actually put ourselves in that situation. I mean, you come off having this awesome match, this awesome career, probably ripping it up the night before, having sex. You come out, you want to go do your thing, but then you got to ask your buddy for a ride because your tires are slashed. So it's like, so what do we do? I don't know. Let's go get breakfast. So then there's JYD and the Von Erichs having breakfast and coffee with sugar and pancakes and someone's waiting on them. Like, dude, throw cell phones out. Honestly, go back to that old school wrestling.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I love detailed hypotheticals. So Mike, you just made my night. Shout out to Ted DiBiase, big friend of the channel. For our longtime listeners, you may have heard this. For our new listeners, go back to episode 129. We interview Mario Giannetti, but we also interview the Million Dollar Man himself. Great interview, great guy, just an epic interview. But a couple other quick hitters I'll throw out there if you don't mind. One is Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho from, I want to say, the mid-2010s in WWE.
You made the list.
Oh, it was just one of the best times of Chris Jericho's career. Of course, besides Y2J, depending on how old you are and what you think is good wrestling. But anyway, these two had a great run as a tag team together, which culminated in Chris Jericho hosting a festival of friendship for him and Kevin Owens, at which point Kevin Owens put Chris Jericho's name on the Kevin Owens list. And it was revealed to the camera before he even turned on Chris Jericho, and everybody watching on TV, everybody in the crowd knew it was coming. One of the best turns of all time. Fast forward to WrestleMania, there's a match between Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho that ends up going on second, which really soured Chris Jericho on WWE and Vince McMahon at the time. If you go back and listen to any of Chris's podcasts on Talk as Jericho, any of the interviews he's done where he discusses this, it would really put him off to WWE. He ends up going over to New Japan for a little bit, having a match with Kenny Omega. I think he wrestled Tetsuya Naito as well. So that ultimately gave him the bug to what was there outside of WWE, and ultimately fast forward to today, to AEW. So that was a really good quick hitter. One other one I'll mention also involving Kevin Owens, and this was actually brought to me by, I'm going to protect their anonymity, Becky R. Shout out to my wife, Becky Ross. Love you. She mentioned
anonymity.
Yes. She brought up Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Becky is a huge fan of Sami Zayn. She actually ran into him one night in Chicago many years ago at a pizza joint with a couple of her friends. One of her friends at the time was a huge wrestling fan. He's like, oh my God, it's Sami Zayn. Can you go over there and talk to him? Like, you know, asking Becky to talk to Sami Zayn on his behalf. Like, how kitschy is that, right? So Becky goes up to him and just goes, hey, I guess you're a wrestler or something. And Sami Zayn just smiles and goes, yeah, I am actually. And being Becky was not a fan of wrestling at the time, she couldn't have been less intimidated by them. And I think he was with Colt Cabana at the time. So Becky ends up talking to these guys for a few minutes. All her friends come over. They all sit together and have pizza together. It was one of the coolest experiences. So Sammy, by some act of God, if you're listening to this episode, I want to thank you for giving my wife the time of day at the time. You're an awesome dude. But the breakup that I'm talking about was in NXT 2015. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are best buds. Sami Zayn had just competed in a title match. They're walking out together. Kevin Owens decides to do a pop-up powerbomb on Sami Zayn onto the apron of the ring. We all know that the apron's the hardest part of the ring. We're reminded of it every week or less, depending on how often you watch wrestling. But it was one of the most violent moments of NXT at that time. And to me, it really set the tone for who Kevin Owens was as a person, as a character, as a wrestler at the time. I think it, to me, it set his career on the right trajectory. It couldn't have been any better. But those are my two quick hitters. I'll stop there. Steve, I'm sure you've got some as well. What do you got?
I'll go real quick with two of them, but I have to add one last thing to what you just said, because that was, to me, one of the greatest moments in NXT. And Kevin Owens was celebrating with Sami Zayn when he won the title and had tears in his eyes, which you know is real because it's his buddy. And then later that, like 10 minutes later or whatever, he does that. It just was like Kevin Owens just cemented himself at that moment as like an all-time heel. It was so well done and brilliant. But anyway, my two. Scott Hall and Kurt Hennig, I believe all of you know who they are. I mean, Razor Ramon and Mr. Perfect, they were in the AWA tag team. Like a lot of like kind of wrestlers of that era got their start there. They're both from Minnesota, right? So yeah, but you know, I don't remember anything all that notable about their breakup, kind of like, but I wanted to bring it up because of what Gary said about like the Blade Runners. It's that it's what's more interesting is kind of where the careers went. I mean, holy crap. I don't even have to spend much time on this. Razor Ramon, Mr. Perfect, Scott Hall later takes his name back with the NWO all-timer. We lost both of them too young, but it's just interesting to see this tag team. And obviously if they had somehow, or if the AWA had stuck around, they wouldn't have done half of what they did if they had been together. And the other one, for those of you that listen with any regularity, I just sang their theme song. I think it might have even been on the last show, but the American Males, like they were kind of a corny tag team in WCW. I think they either, one of those cases where they won the titles for a day, or they won the titles and then WCW didn't acknowledge them. But yeah, it was Marcus Alexander Bagwell and Scotty Riggs, and the NWO had been going, and Marcus Bagwell, it's hard to imagine him as a babyface because he spent a lot of chunk of his career as that smarmy, over the top, arrogant heel. But this was this is where it happened. He turned on Scotty Riggs. And even though, you know, I'm not going to say Buff Bagwell had a Shawn Michaels type career, but he did have a notable career the rest of WCW run. And Scotty kind of wallowed. I think he had like a little resurgence in the ECW for a little while. He tried some gimmicks, but yeah, that was another one. Those guys have been around for a long time, these squeaky clean baby faces, and Bagwell did them dirty.
Amazing. Yes, this has been an amazing list, and I'm glad we got to run down those quick hitters, but there should be some honorable mentions, right?
Yes, and the honorable mentions, although this first one is probably remiss on our part, both of these, the breakup of the Steiners, which caused big pop-up pump to actually be created, you know, when Scott and Rick Steiner were together. And the other one that is an honorable mention that we probably, you know, we've actually got planned to dedicate a whole show for this, is Edge and Christian, because had, you know, their breakup not occurred, two of the greatest characters may never have emerged. But other honorable mentions, the Twin Towers, Akeem and Boss Man, Virgil and Ted DiBiase, the multiple iterations of the Hart Foundation, the Dudleys, Beer Money, Bobby Roode and James Storm, X-Pac and Kane, Hogan and Orndorff, Doom, Guerrero and Mysterio, and last but not least, the breakup of Evolution when Triple H turned on Ric Flair.
Gary, I am so glad you mentioned that honorable mention, because you know what? I was walking through the park today, thinking about this awesome episode that we were going to record today. It was raining, And it was so appropriate because when all of these tag teams broke up, I felt really wet and gray and sad, just like a rainy day. But you know what? When I feel those ways, there's just three little things that I like to keep in mind.
What are those three things? Please tell us. Don't really keep us waiting.
Well, it's the things that pick me up in life. It's these three things that you always got to keep in mind to keep you on the trajectory. Staying humble, staying hungry, and staying hard.
Oh, Triple H.
Woo!